University, the voice of Reichman University.
Against the Odds, lessons in mental toughness with Doron Maman.
Because life only gets harder, and that's why we get stronger.
Hey, and welcome to Against the Odds, lessons in mental toughness, where we understand that life's challenges only gets harder, which is why we have to get stronger. Each week, we talk with extraordinary people to uncover how they use mental toughness to leverage obstacles into opportunities and how you can too. I'm Doron, the MT Doc Maman, a researcher, lecturer, and author on mental toughness. And like you, I'm here to learn and grow. Today, I'm hosting a special guest, a dear friend, and I'm honored to bring into the studio today, Robert Shemin. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the name, let me just give you some credentials. Robert is a nationally recognized wealth expert, investor, best-selling author who has been called one of the top real estate investors in America by multiple journals. Robert has appeared regularly on CNN, Fox News, CNBC, with having his insights reaching millions of people worldwide. A former attorney turned into a self-made millionaire, working with over 1,000 real estate deals, building thriving businesses, and mentoring countless entrepreneurs into wealth creation and so forth. And as I said, he has authored more than a dozen books, including several bestsellers, speaking with audiences worldwide. If I continue on your resume, we won't have time for the rest of the episode. So today we brought in Robert to share how he applies mental toughness to excel in his field and how we can adopt these principles in our lives. So Robert, welcome to the podcast.
Great to see you. Great to be here. And I always love seeing you. We know each other socially, and every time I'm with you, I learn something. So I'm excited not only to talk, but like everyone listening, congratulations for being here, but also to get some great tips. And everybody at whatever level has adversity.
Yeah.
It's here and it never goes away.
Yeah, so where do you see that in your field when you talk to people? I know you work a lot in the real estate field. I know you talk a lot of businesses. Every time I sit with you, and my mind is blown by all the name drops of, I worked with him, I worked with her. You know, if you can't say what you can't say, but what does that mean? What is the type of adversity that you see that people are coping with?
So right now, I think there's more stress and adversity. Of course, we're not going to talk about Israel. Israel's in its own unique position. I'm here every 2 or 3 months.
There you go.
I always tell people there's only one reason Israelis live in Israel. Nobody else could. You got to be tough.
Yeah,
with respect and love.
Yeah.
I come here every 2 months. It's great to be here. Adversity. I mean, a lot of people seem hopeless, even successful people in my country, in America, in South America. You know, I think a lot of it, some of it's real and some of it's invented. Everything to me, and I know you're more academic at this, everything's perception and perspective.
So wait, what do you mean it's invented? Because I think that's something interesting that we haven't ever talked about here on the podcast. What do you see that's being invented in regard to adversity?
So, you know, I look around. I love America. I live in Medellin, Colombia. I travel all over the world. And a lot of people I talk to are just upset, pissed off, angry, whether it's the politics, the internet, the economy, and they seem to me to be living very well. You know, they have a beautiful big house, they have a couple cars, they're traveling around the world. Most of them have a decent business or career. And some of my family and friends, you talk to them, go, things are so bad. And I'm like, what do you mean? And they go, the economy, the government, the politics, the world, crime, out of control. And they're focusing on the problems. They don't focus on solutions. They don't focus on gratitude or where they are. I don't know. I'm worried a little bit. There's an air of stress. Not everybody, but an air of
definitely the majority
despair.
Yeah, yeah.
An air of hopelessness. The government, this and that, and they're angry. They're yelling, and I'm not used to this. You know.
So I think one of the things that's interesting in regards to that is, it's very much complemented by the culture, not of. You said it first, right? It's there's problems rather than solutions. Now the reason why I focus on that is because people look at the solution of how do I live a life without problems, which isn't a concept that exists.
Correct. I thought it did, but it does not.
Right? No.
I don't use the word problem so much. I'm a big believer in the power of the word.
Sure.
There's a book, Biology Belief.
Robert Lipton?
Yeah, Dr. Lipton. I'm a hypnotist, so I'm a big believer in the subconscious, power of the word, loops, and neuro-linguistic programming, which is illegal in Israel unless you're a psychiatrist.
Is
hypnosis.
It? I didn't know that.
Yes. Some hypnotist came here in the 80s and did some hocus pocus, and Israel passed the
law. Uri Geller started bending some spoons and people lost their shit.
Something okay. like that. But anyway, so I don't like to use the word problem. I just said it. I like to use the word challenge.
Sure.
I can overcome it. But in America, a lot of my friends who are very wealthy, very successful from all any perspective, you go like, these people are amazing. What a great life they have. And they say, well, I don't like the politics. We got a problem with this. And you say, well, we're working on that. And then they'll mention five more problems. They'll never even give themselves a chance to talk about possible solutions. They're in a loop of constant stress, problem, negativity. And I don't know where it comes from. I do believe the media, the social media, is part of it.
Sure.
One day I was talking to my father, and he grew up in the 40s, 50s, and he said, back in the day, we didn't have television.
Right.
We had a radio like with one channel.
Right, it was a mono channel.
And he said everybody at night would go out and talk to the neighbors, and everybody got along. There was nothing else to do. Everybody got along. And, you heard advice from your uncle, your neighbor, what's working, what's not working. They gossiped a little bit.
Sure.
But not so much. And now it's all gossip.
the
overwhelming.
The rule in communication is if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
Right? And not only is it overwhelming, it's what sells, it's what people want. Now, just to make it a bit more chaotic, you put into that the whole spin of fake news.
Yeah.
You don't know what's real, you don't know what's not. And this endless chaos starts generating, probably bring us back to what we talked about previously, is about those stress points. Now, when you look at those stress points, I think that's where the core issue lies, that people don't understand that stress is simply also an inevitable of life. I always tell students, where your Advil is. You probably don't know where your vitamins are, right? People are more committed in their life to avoid pain. Kahneman, Tversky's prospect theory, Nobel 100%. Prize winning, right? People are more driven to avoid pain than they are to attain glory. Now, here I'm asking that in regards, specifically for the audience that are here from the university. They're young students that, sure, they're here, they're now, they're ambitious, and they've generated this imaginary finish line that one day they'll finish their degree, they'll go out into the real world.
Amazing job, great salary,
that's
and
it.
Everything will be perfect.
Right into the sunset, get married, and all is well. What are they missing here? To give them a spoiler for what's to come.
I'll use my own idiotic adventure as an example for them. I grew up very poor. I was brought up, go to school. If you don't like it, go to more school. Get a degree. If you don't have a degree, you're a loser. Get a job. Suffer. Go work for a big company. Your doctor, lawyer's preferable. Nice Jewish family. And if you work hard enough and suffer enough, maybe you can retire at 65 or 70 and have a little fun.
Sure.
But I was brought up with that. And then I thought, well, we don't have any money. If people have money, everything's great. So I thought that once I made like $1 million, all my problems would go away, or if I had a great career. And I worked in restaurants. I was thrown out of school. I had dyslexia. I couldn't speak. I was homeless for a little bit. And I found a mentor in real estate, and I did the first year I did nothing. Everybody's different. And about 2 or 3 years, I actually hit it pretty big. I had maybe hundreds of properties. I was making a lot of money. I was so naive. I went to my father and said, Dad, I'm a millionaire. He goes, what do you mean? I go, I have $1 million of debt.
Yeah, there you go.
The real estate was worth more.
I just went the other way.
Yeah, but I thought, wow, the bank gave me $1 million, a mortgage here, a little debt there, and I was making money. I was paying the real estate was paying the debt, but I literally thought I was the money. He goes, dummy, you owe $1 million. You don't have $1 million in your checking account. I went, oh, he destroyed my dream. And I thought, once I got a certain amount of money, like most people are a certain financial job security, that everything would be perfect.
Right.
And I'm going to give you a spoiler. I'm writing a new book now. How's your book coming?
It's going well, man.
So my big book is called How Come That Idiot's Rich and I'm Not. It sounds worse in Hebrew.
And in Hebrew, you have to need more bleep words. Cursing all the way through that
And I'm
sentence.
Writing the follow-up, and the follow-up is How Come That It's Really Rich and I'm Not. And here's the problem. I come to Israel, I have my suit on, which I kind of stick out. Everybody else is in sandals and shorts. And I'm doing these speeches, and they read my books. They see me on the news. And they're like, oh, Robert Shemin, rich multimillionaire American. He has the life, right? And the book starts out with a picture of my bank account from 2 years ago.
I remember you telling me this.
Yeah, negative $99 million
dollars
or billion. I can't even read that many zeros. It's not a joke. The Federal Trade Commission, which I'm sure at some point tried to protect consumers, someone told me, I'm sure they do great work, once you make a lot of money, they just they've sued everybody. Apple, sure. AT&T, Amazon, every seminar company. And they sued me. I didn't know they were suing me. They could have just called me. I've worked with them before. Mm-hmm. And I show up in New York from Medellin, Colombia, where I live, do a big speech to the Orthodox community. And they pull me aside. They hand me a 400-page lawsuit. And they locked my bank accounts. Every bank account, every credit card. Here I am, a successful investor, best-selling books.
With $1 billion of debt.
I couldn't take the Uber. I couldn't get out of the airport. I had to call my friend. I go, can you give me $50? Like, I couldn't pay for the hotel. My credit cards didn't work. They locked everything, and they put a judgment. They, you're guilty before you're proven innocent, of $99 million on all my bank accounts. Now, the good news is I did hire a lawyer, but it's hard to do when you don't have any money.
Sure.
They locked it all.
Sure.
So people say, oh, you have no problems. And the point is, and I love what you teach, wherever you are, there's the next challenge. Yes. You know, when you make a lot of money, then you go, oh God, I got to pay taxes, or there's employee problems, or what do I do, or what's the next challenge, or I'm bored, or there's always the next challenge. It never ends. And, you know, that's one for me. And it was a 1.5 year journey. I just finally made a settlement. And the settlement sounds horrible. I admitted no guilt. I did nothing wrong. But there's some words there, and it sounds like I'm a criminal. And it's affected me a little bit, but I had to deal with it.
Sure.
And I'm sure next year there'll be something else.
Yeah,
and
it's coming.
And what I find interesting, Doron, is I teach a lot of students and how to do entrepreneurship, real estate, money. And me too. We always worry about the stuff that never happens.
That's right.
What if I fail? What if this? What if that? The competition. And you got to worry about those things or think about them. And the things that you never think about always happen.
Sure.
I give an example. You know, people go, well, what about the market in America? I go, yeah, we got to be concerned about it. But let me tell you the real problem. Who thought us 8 years ago we're all going to wear masks, can't fly, and everything shut down?
That's
COVID.
Right. That's right.
Who thought there's going to be a ship that gets stuck in the Suez Canal and you can't get toilet paper in the grocery store? You know, the whole supply chain almost collapsed. The politics, October 7th here, war, Iran, hostages, the Ukraine, Russia. Who would? No one ever thinks of those things.
That's right.
And they always happen.
So
how do you prepare for that?
So okay, so the how do you prepare for that is definitely that's in regards to my research and mental toughness and whatnot. I think though, again, if I summarize at least what you're saying through a different lens, it goes back to Stoic philosophy, where Seneca says, and again, we've talked about this, my favorite quote.
Love Stoicism.
Yeah. So my favorite quote, it's, man suffers more in imagination than he does in reality.
100%.
Right? But you're completing it with something interesting. It's, sure, you're suffering from the things that you're not imagining, from the things you're not there. But at the same time, it's what's happening, or the things that are going to blow up in your face are the things that you're not expecting. They're coming from the angles that you're not prepared for. I can just take that sentence alone. I can obviously relate it to my course, my work that I do with soldiers, CEOs, and whatnot. But much more importantly is something's going to happen. It's not what's going to happen. It's the first initial acceptance that something's going to happen, that people seem to be living in an illusion that it won't. And that's where I think our first major obstacle is. It's how do you code into people? You know, when I work with soldiers, managers, CEOs, or whatnot, I tell them first thing, look, your job is to manage the chaos that's coming.
Correct.
They don't see that. They see themselves and saying, I'm in a position of power. I get to lead. I get to do all these things. Yes, your job is to lead when shit hits the fan. Your job is to organize and manage when the supply doesn't come in time. This is, how do we bring people to that level of acceptance? That's what I'm trying to understand.
And I think, and I can speak from a physical point of view, you know, I do exercise and you have to take care of your body.
Which, by the way, you look good, man.
Thank you. If not, you're going to get sicker. When there's a challenge or chaos, your body can't handle it. You got to be prepared for anything, correct?
That's right.
And I think the mind is the same way. Now, the only thing I've learned, and I'm, you know, I love theory, but I also like very simple things. I love the Jewish tradition, our prayers. I love Stoicism. It actually, and some people don't like it because it's so simple, right? But it works.
Right.
One of the things I really like that helps me deal with stress is two things. Gratitude, correct?
Sure.
Perception, perspective. I think I've told you this. So I love America. I'm from America. But a lot of people are stressed and have these beautiful homes and cars and money and they're traveling and business and a family, but they're stressed. I live in Medellin, Colombia, and they've got their own issues, but it's a culture of happiness.
Yeah.
It's always gets voted one of the happiest places. And I do the taxi driver test.
Okay.
So these guys driving taxis in Medellin, which is 3.5 million, the traffic's actually worse than Tel Aviv. Hard to believe, okay. Right? It's a horrible job, in my opinion. Stressful.
Sure.
They work 7 days straight, like 15, 18 hours. They just have to pay the rent on the taxi. Some days they don't even make the rent. They make nothing.
Wow.
Working all day in traffic, stress. You know, maybe they make $300 to $600 a month, which in Colombia is just enough to rent an apartment, eat. They don't go on trips. They don't own a car, most of them. And they sometimes can't even pay for their kids' school books. You know, you hear this stuff.
Sure.
But you ask anybody in Colombia, every cab driver for 28 years, because the Americans are complaining. I say, ask the cab driver, ¿Cómo estás? How are you? ¿Macoré? Every time they give the same answer. Me? I'm the happiest guy on the planet. I'm a millionaire. What do you mean? One, I got a job.
Attaboy.
A lot of my friends in the hood don't have a job. You know, at least I have something to do.
That's right.
Number two, I have a wife. Look, she's so beautiful. I have a kid. Look, you know, Juan Pepe is a beautiful. You know, I had something to eat today. I live in Medellin, the most beautiful city. The weather's nice. I'm getting to meet you. And I'm like, wait a minute. This guy has every reason to complain. You know, basically materialistically has almost nothing. And he's happy. And I'm like, why is that? Perception. He made a choice. He has challenges to focus on what he does have. And the second thing that helps me out is, I know your motto is it only gets
harder,
which is true. And you want harder.
That's right.
By the way, my biggest fear when I got successful is I'm going to get lazy and bored and I won't grow.
Oh, so there's a lot to talk about in regards to that. I think too many success stories that end up in that avenue.
And I know a lot of, we help rehabilitate some soldiers who are in these amazing, horrible conditions. I know you've been there with people. When you're in a real challenging situation, when you're starting a business, when it's tough and you're failing and you barely have any money and you can't pay the bills, you look back and that's the best part.
Right.
And then one of my biggest fears is I won't have a challenge. What's my next challenge? I have to find the next challenge.
There's a great joke about this guy who's sitting and he's like, oh, there's so many challenges. I don't know what to do and so much stress and work. And how am I going to manage all this stuff and my wife and my kids? And this guy walks past him and he's like whistling and happy. And he goes, how the hell are you so happy? And he goes, bro, I found a community. Everyone's cool. Everyone's chill. Nobody bothers anyone. No problems. Life is good there. You got to come. He goes, can I come with you? He goes, sure. So he takes him to the graveyard.
Cemetery.
That's right.
That's it. I always say rest in the next life.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And by the way, I love Israel and you got to have a sense of humor. Every Israeli I talk to, how are things? They go, horrible. The government's horrible. The economy's horrible. The war, the this, the that, the taxes. And then they go, yeah, but I just spent 2 months in Thailand. I'm going to Bali next week. you know, and I wait a minute. You know, I'm doing an exit. We're doing a startup. I got this going, that going. And it's like, wait a minute. Things aren't that bad. I mean, there are challenges always, but it's perception and perspective. And the other thing is, I was you know, it's one thing when I was homeless to have no money. When you have a lot of real estate and ownership and money and you can't get it with this FTC lawsuit that lasted a while, it was shocking. And one of my friends who'd been to it said, my favorite passage from the Bible, whatever it says in English, he said, all storms pass. This too shall pass.
That's right.
And you don't see it when you're in it. Mm-hmm. Everyone's been through it, a death, a sickness, a problem. And it always passes somehow.
Right.
And then you get the next challenge.
Yeah.
And that really kept me going. And then the other thing is, what in me brought this upon it? I have to take responsibility. Mm-hmm. What can I learn from this?
That's right.
And I'm telling you, I learned amazing lessons. Be very careful who you associate with. One bad partner, I speak for like 100 different companies.
Sure.
I spoke for a company. I left them. I didn't like where they were going. A year later, they got sued and they named me in the lawsuit just because I was there and American named everybody. But I learned that you got to be so careful. You can take 20 years to build your reputation. One wrong person, one wrong sentence, it's gone in seconds.
That's right.
Like the cancel thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to take responsibility. It was my fault.
Yeah.
Look, and what did I learn? How can I be better?
So I'll tell you a few things in regards to that. Number one, in regards to the Medellin, I can't say the two L's, the Medellin community the Medellin community versus we'll say the states for sake of argument. Number one is comparison is the thief of joy.
Yep.
right?
It's a great saying. You got to say it again. Comparison is the thief of joy.
That's right.
And we're bred to do that. We're born. The neighbor, you know, I have a 5-bedroom mansion. He has a 6-bedroom mansion. That's my life sucks.
By the way, if you take it back to philosophy, it's called, I think it's originally called Vladimir's Dilemma. I might be misnaming it, but the idea was that this guy is sitting and he has, he finds a genie, and this genie says, I can grant you one wish. However, there's one condition. Whatever you get, your neighbor will get twice as much. So yes, what do you wish for? So he says, take out one of my eyes.
Oh, horrible.
And no, and that just shows us how driven we are. Now, you look at that also, there's been research about this in the past. I can't remember a quote who it was, but you know, people who make on average between $10 to $25 million a year are generally much more likely to suffer from depression than people on the lower side of the end. Way, way lower. Now, again, it comes back to this comparison mindset.
By the way, something I learned, because I have to run businesses with people, very practical. And when you give someone a raise or a bigger office, you're like, oh, you know, Doron has done great. We're going to reward him with a 20% salary increase and a bonus and a bigger office. And you'll be probably happy for like a day or two, correct?
That's right.
But what happens? Everyone else gets pissed off. The other 20 employees go, why did Doron get the bigger office? Why did he get the raise? I'm going to stop working as much. And that really happens.
That's right.
You got to be so careful. Government incentives, salaries, many times it backfires. What we have good intentions, we got to be so careful, because people think. Someone once told me one of the reasons we come to Earth is to practice contrast, pain, pleasure, measure.
That's very cool.
And then later on we use it in another dimension or something. I don't know.
I haven't been to the next dimension, so I can't say.
I'm not worried about it either, but I think it's various, because life is about contrast.
That's right.
And wherever we are, the neighbor's doing better, the jealousy, the insecurity, how do I compare? And I think that's the problem with social media. Even me, I have a great life. Amazing, right? Materialistically, spiritually. Sometimes I watch social media and go, wait a minute. This 22-year rapper's got a private plane, the gold.
His necklace is worth more than my house.
Yeah, exactly. And the babes. And I'm like, what's wrong with me? You know, he has 1 million followers. I'm like, 60,000.
So wait,
what's he doing? Even me, and I consider myself educated of all, even sometimes I think that, and imagine a kid watching that stuff, those videos all day and all night.
So for kids, it's even worse. But the psychology that goes behind this is, it's discussed as the ideal self versus the real self. Now, the idea is that when we promote items on LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, whatever platform you're on, no one is putting the ugly pictures of themselves.
Correct.
No one's putting the shitty days of themselves. They're saying, oh, I'm, you know, they're focused. I always said that I will never upload pictures of my food because it's going to get cold. I'm like, the food, eat the food. What? Why does someone who's sitting now on the other side of the earth, what does he eat that I'm eating? I don't know what. Now, that's in regards to one thing. By the way, if I do take pictures of my food, it's only because I'm sitting with other people and I take a picture with them. So I'm saying that as a side note. With that said, this idea of the ideal self is that when we want to portray ourselves, it's this internal marketing mechanism that exists that says we have to portray ourselves to the world. This is the ultimate best version of Doron, of Robert, and so forth. That, you know, that's one of the reasons why when I talked, when I created the podcast about, you know, my brain tumor, when I create all this stuff, I said, I'm taking down all the filters. I'm going to show the bloody bandages. I'm going to show the videos of them literally cutting into my brain and so forth. Now, where does this compete with? This competes with the idea of the real self. Now, the real self is who we really are, the person that we're afraid to promote to the world, the person that only the people who are truly close to us will love and accept at all places. Now, what happens as a function of that delta is that when you go online and you see that rapper, you see that guy, that girl, whoever, and say, they have X and I have X minus or X divided by
25
or whatever it is, all of a sudden, we feel this place that we have to generate a competition that doesn't exist.
Correct. Now, I think the irony, I love what you just said, but I think there's an irony. I used to think I had to impress people, correct? When I spoke, my name is Robert. Even though I flunked out of high school, I got a JD MBA, a law, and a master's of business. I've written some New York Times bestsellers. Let me tell you how great I am and how smart I am and how perfect I am. And maybe in the 80s or 90s, we call it the hoes and bros, the cars, and it was impressive. Now, I think ourselves, if you ask yourself deeply, we like authenticity.
Yeah,
we like real.
We want it.
We want it. And it's hard to find sometimes. And now the more authentic I am, the more real I am, Even though we're taught, I was taught, my parents and grandparents said, never talk, tell people your personal stuff. Don't tell the neighbors. Don't tell them your problems. Don't talk about money. Don't talk about religion.
Politics.
Just stay, you know, happy. We have to have a good image with the neighbors. That was when I started being honest and real, everything took off better. People like real. What do you think? And the whole reason we're trying to do that higher, better, illusionary fantasy self is to impress people so they'll like us. It could work for some people, but I'm telling you, I think a lot of people now like the authenticity.
Well, I think the reason why the authenticity is appreciated is because the market became saturated with bullshit. No, that's seriously.
100%. Like, I mean, I remember when I saw you and you had a banner, I said, what's that banner? And I said, I have cancer. I'm like, what?
Brain surgery, cancer. I'm sorry, excuse me.
Sorry, brain surgery. Pardon me.
Which doesn't sound much better.
Talking about comparisons. Oh, you had a box to live in? We didn't have a box. We had a newspaper. Yeah. But your serious surgery, and you came right out and said, I'm like, nobody does that.
Yeah.
You know, good morning. How are you? How are you? Everything's great. Uh-huh. Oh, let me tell you, I went to see the doctor. What did he say?
Yeah.
You know, you ease into it. And I'm like, this guy's real.
Yeah, man.
I love it. And that's what I really respect about you. And it's hard to find these days.
So, all right. So, you know what? Hard to find. I agree.
Harder to find.
Harder to find, for sure. But maybe my more important question is, how do we help people develop it? How do I help people? And I'm asking from your world. I know what my theories and research says. I'm curious from your position. When you come to people and you see the bullshit, right? Like, I don't mean to poke any cultural bears, but when I think of the American community, it's like, oh, how are you? Fine, I'm great.
He's great. Right,
die. There's a reason why biopharma, big pharma is pushing all these antidepressants on people. It's because people are having a major problem with how they perceive themselves, experience things. Mental health is on the decline. Like, we're in
big trouble.
The rise. We're in deep, deep, deep shit. So my question is, how do we help people come to the place where they understand that, like, step out of the bullshit and show me the real self and step further away from the real ideal self?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a movement now, both in marketing, stories, authenticity, people's BS antennas very high. And, you know, I hate to say this, number one, authenticity. Be yourself. People, you need to be yourself. People want you to be yourself. And Bob, if you're doing all that BS stuff, what are you going to attract? Correct?
Yeah, BS.
And, I give a horrible example. A friend girl of mine in Miami, this is a horrible example, said, I'm going to get a breast augmentation.
Okay.
And I said, you're beautiful as you are. Like, you're a supermodel. Why would you do that? Somewhere in her mind, somebody told her, you need this, you need that. And I mean, I'm telling you, this girl was stunningly beautiful inside and out. I said, don't do it. She goes, what do you mean? I said, okay, let's say you get these big plastic things, and I'm no judgment on anybody. I'm just an example here. What kind of guy are you going to attract? Correct?
Right.
What kind of person? And when you do the, and I love in Hebrew, falsanim.
Yeah.
When you're projecting all that materialistic stuff, and I've been there, what are you going to attract? The minute you don't have the party or invite them all to your mansion or pay for the food, they don't come. They're not real friends.
I understand that.
And I think what we all want, we want to be listened to. We want to be heard authentic, not just seen.
We want to be heard.
Yeah, really heard. And number two, we want real connection. And real connection doesn't come from, let me pick you up in my Rolls Royce and show you how rich I am and tell you how great everything is. That's not a real connection.
Sure.
Connect on a human level. And for me, I'll never forget, I had a consultant once. I come hear me speak. He goes, Robert, you're a great speaker, but you spend an hour talking about yourself and your degrees and your books. And why don't you tell them that you couldn't speak when you were little? I'm like, why would I say that? It's embarrassing. I had a speech impediment. Why don't you tell them they threw you out of high school a few times, more than three times?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell them you were homeless for a while? I'm like, oh my God, if my parents hear that, they're going to maybe change my last name. And I started talking about those things. And everyone's like, I can relate. My kid has H-A-D-D-T. I can't even say it.
Yeah. Seven letters of the alphabet.
I can't focus enough to say it.
I get it.
Attention deficit. My daughter has a speech impediment. I was homeless for a while. And I made real connection and real business and real people and real success, as opposed to, let me tell you how great I am. And people are scared to try it because there's so much of it. But I think if you do it, you'll do better. The whole reason we're trying to impress people is so they'll like us, but they're not going to really like us because they like us for the wrong reasons.
So I'll say one more thing about that, and it's funny. I'm more than happily married to my beautiful wife, Dani. I'm not sure if she's happily married to me, but that's that's a different conversation.
Mazel tov.
Yeah, but I remember back when I was dating, and I had a very deep conversation with a friend of mine who she's a psychotherapist these days. She's a very, very successful psychotherapist.
I need her number.
And one of the things that she said, she talked to me a lot about this whole notion of what happens when you start dating, long before I was married, what happens when you start dating and you present the wrong person, as in you don't come as the real person. Now, what happens to the guy is he'll come and he'll pick up the girl in a nice car and he'll take her out for dinner and he'll pay for her and he'll do all these things and then he'll send her roses and he'll do all these wonderful...
Love bombing.
Look, he'll do all these wonderful courteous gestures. And then after 3 months, he'll tell her...
I was thinking 90 days. You read my mind.
There you go. So three
maybe
months.
Maybe 90 days.
So I remember I told my wife when we were dating after 3 months, I told her, listen, I think I'm in love with you. And he'll tell her, I'm in love with you. And she says, wow, this guy who buys flowers and does dinners and all these things... And she'll say, I'm in love with you too. And what'll be the next thing he'll do? He'll fart. Hold on. Now, what happens in the mind of the partner, right? Whether it's a boy, girl, boy, boy, whatever, everyone with their own say. What happens in the mind of the partner? They're going, wait, where's the guy that bought me flowers? Where's the guy who did this? Where's the guy who did that? Now, obviously, you don't have to put down all of your guards in one shot. I'm not saying go out on date number one, fart at dinner and see what happens. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying is when you start with presenting the wrong person, you are selling, it's like selling the wrong product. And as a function of that, you are going to generate.
You're going to get a return.
You're going to get a return. You're going to get a vacuum. You're going to get that lawsuit or I don't know what it's going to be. But yes, that is the price of lack of authenticity. I want to, I finish all of my episodes. We talked about so many things. I can talk about more, but I do want to finish. Like I finish all of my episodes, I have a series of questions that I ask all of my guests.
We have some speed questions, yeah, speed answers,
speed questions, whatever you want to call it. I do want you to answer these questions in respect to your experience, your world, and so forth. So, in respect to your world, I want you to define mental toughness in one sentence. These are hard questions, man.
It's a really hard one. Mental toughness in one question. Being able to successfully, efficiently deal with all challenges and come out better, stronger.
Yeah, no, you said the right word, better. I always say to my course, when you get to the top of the mountain, any direction you go by definition is down. You always want to, so how can I get better? How can I get better?
The minute I get the biggest, worst challenges, I'm like, okay, I have to deal with it. Got to be real. You know, I feel the emotions and say, what can I learn from this? How can I get better? What can I learn from it? I got to take responsibility for
100%.
It.
100%. I always tell my students, theory without practice, without action is meaningless. Yep. Aristotle used to say, teoria cum praxi, same thing. So give me one action item, something practically, a golden piece of advice that our listeners can act on in order to build their mental toughness in regards to your world.
So I tell everybody, ask for help. If that's a reasonable answer for this. I'm always learning, growing. I have two mentors now, whether it's a rabbi, a mentor, a great uncle, father, parent, and have real conversations about how to deal with this stuff and be real. We all need someone to talk to and use their experience because they have the experience.
That's right.
And they guide me. So one of my mentor, I don't know about you, I'm very anxious about certain things.
Yeah.
One is traffic, the bank, you know, you go wait in line and you know, I'm in a rush and I get stressed out or I'm trying to meet a goal and all the tasks. And she says, breathe, so simple, and focus on the goal.
That's right.
So I used to go when I'm in line at the bank, I'm freaking out. Why am I wasting my time? I hate the bank. And I'm like, breathe, gratitude. At least I have money. At least I have a bank account or something. And the goal is let me get this money moved or get these papers signed and it will happen. And step back.
Yeah.
But I think we need some, like even talking to you, we need whether it's professor or mentor, rabbi, aunt. I think one of the reasons I'm able to do this stuff is I've had good training, mentoring,
sure,
advice.
Sure. Makes sense.
Yeah. Get help.
Yeah. I define mental toughness in my book, in my course, in my research, that it sits upon three pillars. The first is that values are drivers of behavior. We've talked about this quite a lot. The second, maybe one of the most important things that we talked about today, is that accepting that there will be endless challenges. And thirdly, that you have to have an unshakable self-confidence. So before we wrap things up, three last questions about each of these pillars. Number one, what are the core values that keeps you grounded during the toughest of times?
The core value is I'm here to serve, and I'm here to be as happy as possible. God wants me to be happy.
Very interesting.
To me, it's a high spiritual thing that I've studied. And so I'm here to serve. When I focus just on me, ego, I call that easing God out.
Sure. Easing God out.
It's a dirty place. It's not fun. It's depressing. When I'm just thinking about me, oh, well, this happened to me, that happened to me. When I realize, and I think you are too, you're here to serve your students, serve your family, serve your community. Mm-hmm. We want to help people get better. We have to get better to help others. We have to work on ourselves first, of course. And when I remember that, it puts everything into perspective.
Yeah, that really goes along with my research also. You know, when we find that, being achievement-oriented is great, but it will only bring you so far, generally for a short amount of time. However, when your achievement is combined with an element of benevolence, meaning my success will allow me to serve some group that I identify with, that's when the highest levels of mental toughness are displayed. So I'm 100% with you on that.
And I think just being on purpose also. And that part, and you taught me about that benevolence part, which is a big factor. When it's just about me, it gets old very quickly.
That's right. That's right. Question two of the pillars. How do you stop pain from turning into suffering?
Wow. Those are
I come hard, man.
Two big words. And, you know, I think no one makes us suffer more than ourselves.
100%.
And the imagination and the voices in the head. So I'll give a quick example, if that's okay, practical. We just brought into Chabad and Medellin 20-30 amazing soldiers from Israel, I think special forces, combat. They were very effective with PTSD.
Sure.
And they made me give them a speech without any preparation. I'm like, how am I going to talk to these great soldiers? My life's, I don't do anything compared to what they do. You know, I'm not in combat. And I think the answer is from pain to suffering. First, I used to deny it. You know, I'm a tough guy. It doesn't hurt. Well, my arm is bleeding and broken. You can't deny it. So you got to feel it. You got to acknowledge it.
100%. Correct? Yes.
First thing, breathing, the power of the mind, what we focus on. And, you know, woe is me. I had this horrible thing happen. And I told the soldiers, don't think I'd come up with everybody, including me, has these 20 voices in their head all the time.
20 sounds very low to me.
Yeah. I call it the drunken monkey.
Yeah, there you
know,
go.
Robert, I'm tired. I'm jet lagged. What am I doing here at the podcast? I got to go make some emails. I got to pay some bills. I got to call my girlfriend. I got to pay the taxes. What's going on here in Israel? The life sucks. You know, it's too hot. It's too cold. All those voices. And I breathe. I acknowledge it. And I decide which voice am I going to listen to.
Yeah. There's a lot about that. A lot about that in regards. Also NLP, I know that as well, but managing self-dialogue, huge.
And I've we've all been mentally ill, I think. Everybody's on the planet touching. I used to think I was schizophrenic. I hear all these voices and anxieties. And then I decided, listen to the good voice. Listen to my mother's voice. Listen to the positive mentor's voice. Focus on your goals. Move forward. You have a choice.
Right.
You always have a choice.
My father's a Chozer B'Tshuva. He's a religious man.
Yeah.
So he'll always tell me, Don, it's important that you speak with God every single day. But if he answers you, you're in trouble.
Yeah. And last thing, because contrast about the neighbor, one of the reasons I work with homeless children, sure. I was homeless.
Yeah, I see. I see a lot of the work you've been doing just on social media.
And I'll tell you why.
And
people go, oh, it's for tax reasons. No, I'm in real estate. I don't pay taxes legally.
You know how to play the game.
The big, beautiful tax bill, Trump. Anyway, that's what everybody always says. Oh, you're trying to cheat on your taxes. No, I said it puts my life in perspective. And that is a contrast. I wonder if that's okay. Because I think like when I go out to feed the homeless kids in the streets of Medellin, or I've done it here in Israel, you know, I have problems, you know, business, money, partners, deals. And when I go out and work with people that have nothing, all my problems go away.
Yeah.
That's a reverse contrast. Is that okay? I'm asking the professor, the teacher.
I gotta research it, but it makes plenty of logical sense to me.
Yeah, and gratitude. Hey, I've got a house. I've got a job. I've got I'm okay. I had plenty to eat today, and when you focus on those things, the pains go away and the suffering doesn't come so much.
Right. Last question. What practice has been most effective in building your self-confidence?
Five things. Meditation, prayer, meditation, prayer, meditation, prayer. centering on what's important,
sure.
the spiritual self, the inner world, God, Baruch Hashem, light. I'm not kidding. And I tell people, if I didn't meditate or pray every day, and I miss some days, I'm not perfect, I would probably be in a mental institution with the most powerful drugs wrapped up.
I can understand.
And it really helps me out. And then practice. One of my mantras, I have a couple of them, is be bold. Now, that's not ego. Ego's, you know, let me tell you how great I am and I'm the best. We all have a little bit of that. I'm sure I do. I'm a speaker. So I have probably more than most. But why not be bold? Talk to the person. Take the chance. Open the book. To me, like, people are like books. I used to be scared to talk to anybody. I couldn't talk. And now I'm like, just go talk to them. Yeah. What's the worst thing that happened? Nothing.
Just so you know, last night I was...
bold.
Last night you butt called me by mistake.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, 10 o'clock at night. I'm finishing. I was working with soldiers in Jerusalem, Beit Lochem, and I'm driving back and I had someone in the car and they see all of a sudden my phone call is ringing and they say, Robert Shemin is calling you? I go, yeah, Robert. He's a friend of mine.
Nothing better to do.
No. And they go, Malchave Robert, like, what? How do you know Robert Shemin? I'm like, we met at a hotel. We just talked just one day. One day I was walking with my friend. Yeah, we just grabbed a coffee. You're like, you know what? Let's have a cup of coffee. And it's like the seventh or eighth time that we've already sat down. And yes, 100%. It's just go up, talk to people, make it happen.
So your life has two risks. Risk of doing something. I could fail. I could make a mistake. I could look stupid. To me, the biggest risk is not doing it. That's self-confidence. And so, it's like practice. I used to not talk to anybody. I was scared. I thought everybody was smarter than me, richer than me, better than me. And I'm like, I talked to everybody now and we're all the same.
Right.
Everybody.
I think I have a sentence to summarize the podcast, summarize this idea and everything also altogether. But it's something that's really been sitting with me very, very hard lately. And it's this idea that it's hard to be a loser and it's hard to be a winner.
Yep.
You just got to choose which hard you want.
Right. And I want to say one thing that I hope you like. No matter how powerful, rich, important we think we are, every time anyone does an interview or a speech or a concert, and I work with some big stars, and I'm about to do it to you, how did I do?
No.
How did I do?
You were terrible.
Yeah. We all have that insecurity, right? Even the biggest, you think the most important, the successful
That's
person,
right.
And we all say, did I do okay? How did I do? Could I have done better?
Yeah.
Right? We all have that thought.
That's right.
And, you know, so there's always that, the confidence, and there's always that little insecurity. We all have it. It never goes away 100%, I don't believe.
I agree.
You just have to deal with it.
I agree, man. Look.
Did I do okay?
Yeah. look.
Are you sure?
I think you're all right. I think you'll be all right. I really want to thank Robert for coming by. I know he's, you know, whenever we catch each other, it's totally on the fly and whatnot. Usually, before I finish with the last paragraph that I always read and I tell people whatnot, I think, first of all, how can people reach out to you, connect to you, follow you?
Robert Shemin, Shemin, Facebook. I need more friends. I had one. I stopped paying him. He's not my friend anymore. And I always need more friends. We're putting up robertshemin.com in a few weeks, relaunching everything. So come by. And I want to say thanks for listening and thanks for all that you do, because you're dealing with something that everybody needs to deal with, mental toughness, resilience. We all need it. We need more of it, especially in these days. So thank you for all you're doing.
100%. So something I never got to do until now, but now I can. It was something I wanted to, because also for me, it took a while for things to get off.
Just do it.
Well, no. Oh, actually, Nike just changed their slogan.
What is it now?
Why do it? But that's a whole different podcast.
That's a whole other
we'll talk about
research
that.
Paper we'll, for
we'll
you, right? The motivation, the why.
Oh, yeah.
Why is the most one of the most important?
It's the most important. But hold on. We'll put that aside. With that said, I do want to finish with one more thing. Now that things have progressed a bit and whatnot, and hopefully this will be a new tradition that I'll be starting in episodes forward, my guests come voluntarily from the goodness of their heart, from the willingness to help, to influence others. So the very little that I can contribute back is a copy of my new book.
Ah!
It only gets harder.
Best gift ever.
There you go. But most importantly, and this is a spoiler for what comes at the end, I tell people, if you want to build mental toughness in the end, there's only one way to do it. You got to eat shit.
I love it.
So you get an eat shit sticker as well.
Yeah. I tell a lot of people that, and a lot of people love it, and a lot of people don't like it.
Yeah, and I don't care. Fuck them.
But it's the truth.
Exactly. That's the authenticity.
I love this, man. This is going right on my refrigerator.
All right, man. Look, so friends, if you are interested in finding more ways to build your mental toughness, please go to www.themtdoc.com, where you will find links to connect with me via LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, and join the private WhatsApp group where you can get weekly messages on how to build your mental toughness, or just reach out to me personally via Daron@themtdoc.com. And with that, I want to remind you all, it will only get harder, which is why we have to get stronger. So until next time, learn, apply, keep building your mental toughness, and I'll see you all in the next episode. Robert, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
Against the Odds. Lessons in mental toughness with Daron Maman.
Because life only gets harder, and that's why we get stronger.